Hi, everyone, and welcome to Courageous Conversations About Our Schools. This is your host, Ken Peternick, and my guests today are educators who co-authored a book in 2022 called Morning Classroom Conversations. Let's meet them now, and then I will say a bit about why I invited them to join me. First, I want to introduce Kelly Dombrowski. Kelly, welcome to Courageous Conversations. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what you do, and where you do it.
My name is Kelly Dombrowski. I am a school psychologist. I have my PsyD degree in school psychology, and I'm currently practicing as a school psychologist in River Edge Public Schools, which is a public elementary school in northern New Jersey. I have previous experience in other towns in New Jersey as a school psychologist and in Jersey City, New Jersey, as a consultant representing the Social Emotional and Character Development Lab at Rutgers University. And I currently live in Ringwood, New Jersey, which is a northern New Jersey town close to the New York State border.
Great. Thanks so much. Welcome to the show, Kelly. And next, I want to introduce one of her co-authors, Nina Murphy. Welcome, Nina.
Hi, I'm Nina Murphy. I am also a school psychologist, and I work in a public school, Three Village, which is out on Long Island in Setauket. And I also am a licensed psychologist. I have a small private practice, and I do some work with educating teachers on social emotional character development through the greater region of upstate New York.
And thanks for that, Nina. And there is a third co-author by the name of Maurice Elias. Could you say a little bit about him since he's not on the show with us today?
Sure. So I don't really feel that I could do Maurice's resume justice. It is miles long with all he's done in the field, but Maurice is a mentor of both Kelly and I and a fantastic resource when it comes to social emotional learning. He's a professor at Rutgers. He runs the Social Emotional Character Development Lab and is very involved at the state, local, and an international level, even on social emotional learning and competence for character development.
Thank you for that. And I will say that I had the pleasure of having Maurice on as a guest with a couple of other people. We had an episode as part of this podcast several months ago about how schools can deal with anti-Semitism. And he and a few others, we had a wonderful conversation about the nature of the problem and what educators and parents can do in response. So I'm familiar with Maurice and love his work. Okay, so if you've listened to this podcast, you know it's about how adults can have better, less contentious, and more fruitful conversations about schools, like the books that kids have access to, what they can and should study, the conversations about race and gender and sexual identity, topics that these days raise the temperature and often get educators, parents, and people who set school rules riled up and at odds with each other. Too often, the conversations aren't very healthy. Civil debates over important issues, but end up being shouting matches with name-calling, bullying, and personal attacks, the very things we teach kindergartners not to do. But that's actually what worries me about what's going on. Aside from the fact that these toxic interactions almost never resolve the issues they're fighting about, what I'm concerned about is the effect that they have on young people. There's a guy named Roland Barth who was a former teacher and a principal and then later served as a professor at Harvard University who wrote this many years ago. If relationships between administrators and teachers and Barth very well could have added parents and board members, if those relationships are fearful, competitive, suspicious, and corrosive, then these qualities will disseminate through the school community. And that's really my worry. What are the young people learning when they see adults managing their differences in such dysfunctional ways, not just about schools, but about politics and religion and so many other contentious topics these days? But Barth offers an optimistic note, which is a key reason I founded and host this podcast. He says, if the relationships between adults are trusting, generous, helpful, and cooperative, then the relationships between teachers and students, between students and students, between teachers and parents are likely to be trusting, generous, helpful, and cooperative. So Kelly and Nina, I'm so eager to hear you talk about your your book, Morning Classroom Conversations, and the benefits those conversations have for students in our communities. But what do you think about Barth's observation about adults and what we model sometimes for young people? What do you think about what young people are learning about the way that we as adults sometimes relate to each other on social media and cable news and the less than healthy interactions they sometimes see among families and friends?
I think it's definitely, unfortunately, encouraging polarization and discouraging kind of healthy, organic conversations between one another with an open dialogue where we learn rather than kind of being stuck in where we are.
I definitely agree that that there is hope though. Like I liked how there was that reframe at the end, because although there absolutely is modeled behavior, there is hope to allow. I've seen some fantastic youth leadership through my research, but also through my work, and to see students rise above and or find that positive mentor who can give them the appropriate modeled behavior. I really do believe in the work, and of course that's why we are here and doing what we do, but I do think there's a lot of potential for growth, and hopefully those folks that aren't modeling the appropriate behaviors are not people that these young children would learn to follow or look up to in any sense.
I think it's important to build resilience, and that's one of the main, inspirations for our book, because there will always, unfortunately, be exposure to those negativities, and those negative interactions and the polarizations. But we want to really emphasize the positive interactions and the teachers that do want to connect with their community members and with their students.
So let's jump in and have you share with our listeners a sort of overview of the book that you co-wrote with Dr. Elias and why you wrote it and who it's for.
Absolutely. So our goal in writing this book was because we were having conversations, we were doing some work through the social emotional character development lab in schools and noticing that young people, adolescents particularly, were in need of conversation and that teachers weren't necessarily seeing conversation as a tool. While at the elementary school, there's things like morning meeting and sitting in a circle and that feels childish when kids get older, but their benefits of what goes on at the elementary level still is beneficial at the older grades. And so this book was written for grades 5 through 12. And the goal is it's not a program, it's not supposed to be something that schools need a ton of resources to tackle. It really is just a reminder and a really helpful tool to set the stage for having more frequent conversations. The goal would be 10 to 15 minutes per day, but we do have quite a bit within the book that allows for flexibility because we understand not every school, every teacher, every classroom is going to be able to sustain that model. So we just talk about the importance of consistency. And the book is really for any educator, any administrator, any mental health professional who is passionate, any parent who wants to learn more. I know there's been a lot of polarization with social emotional learning in general and understanding what it is. A parent could read this and learn a little bit more about the benefits of some of these systems that really are in place and how we make them more concrete.
And it's not so much a program as it is a guide. And it kind of, starts off by explaining, the science behind why morning classroom conversations is important. It breaks down the components of it. And it's really meant to be something that if someone wants to implement it, this book is all they need. And they can, implement it in the kind of original way that we saw, as Nina was explaining daily, or if there's a lot of alternative options. So there's definitely flexibility there.
Thanks for that quick overview. I read the book recently and really enjoyed it. And I was struck by the parts of the book where you talk about adolescence as you did, Nina, and why this is important to them. But could you talk a little bit about what, and for people that haven't been in school a while, we may forget that the kids, the way they communicate with each other is very different than some of us that went to school at an earlier time and didn't have social media. We didn't have smartphones. We didn't text or email or direct message each other. Talk a little bit about how kids, adolescents today typically communicate, why it's a problem, and what having just a 10 to 15 minute opportunity to have a face-to-face conversation in school every day why that could be beneficial for them.
So it allows for kind of a supported environment, a structured supported environment that unfortunately students don't often get. And we would love for this to be, learned organically. And in a lot of ways it is, but in a lot of ways they're learning negative ways to communicate with one another. So morning classroom conversations just gives that kind of brave space, as we talk about in the book, that allows for structure and support for students to share their thoughts, react to others' thoughts, engage with each other in a healthy way, and kind of, as I mentioned earlier, kind of building that resilience to social media and to the polarization that is there, and it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon, but we want to make sure that they have the skills to kind of tackle that in a healthy way and modeling healthy ways to communicate with one another. And I feel like there's even a little bit of hesitance, even if there is an organic conversation, hesitance with students and adults, fear of volatility in those conversations, where MCCs is structured to prevent those kinds of, reactions and judgments.
I read, and I was fascinated by this, that students, adolescents in particular today, can sort of become defined by social media. Their identity is sort of defined by how they're portrayed and perceived in social media. And I can't imagine that's very healthy. And we hear these, read these reports about adolescents suffering, and particularly young women suffering from anxiety, and I have to believe that's connected to the way they communicate and are see themselves defined through social media.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure to look and dress and think and act a certain way. And what you might notice and what I've certainly noticed is I feel like there's a lot of, well, I feel this way. Are you with me or are you against me? And it kind of takes away that middle ground and allows for open dialogue. And I think unfortunately often robs children of that sense of developing crucial conversation skills in an organic way. Because there's so much of following the crowd.
Can you describe for our listeners what a morning conversation with, say, a group of adolescents might look and sound like?
Absolutely, yeah. So the book provides 3 years worth of prompts. So it wouldn't be an open-ended, let's open the floor and see what people want to talk about today. Our goal is to align with the values. So if the school has certain, PBIS, positive behavior interventions and support program, or some type of mission statement that they follow, we really want to align that so it's embedded within. And we actually, throughout the book, give prompts that you could give to a class in order to open the floor. And really how it's supposed to work is that you start very low vulnerability with things like sunsets or sunrises, right? Keep it nice and light, ice cream or chips, right? And we want to keep that energy very, very light. And as you progress into the conversations, the students are going to get more and more comfortable. So we've seen in the beginning that students who are maybe a little bit more shy, hesitant to speak up, they gain that confidence because the brave space is facilitated regularly. So that's why we feel it's so important to do it consistently, because students really do grow through that process. And eventually you're asking questions about even political conversations, or asking questions about maybe who's a role model for them, who matters to them, or if you were the president of the United States for a day, what would be your first mission? And in asking those questions, if you ask that on the first day, you probably wouldn't get the answers you'd get toward the later part of the year. So we really, the book has a great structure of providing prompts that build that up throughout time.
So what do you do when the inevitable problem arises where someone in one of these conversations says something and someone else says, "You're so stupid for saying that," or maybe it's a little more subtle where someone shares something and they're being vulnerable or just sharing a perspective and other kids in the class laugh at it?
So we do recommend a month zero, which is before you start true prompts. And during that month, we recommend, similar to what most teachers organically do, setting norms, setting rules and regulations for the what ifs, and really playing out those scenarios with your class, rather than you as a group facilitator feeling like you have to reprimand, but rather allowing the students to hold each other accountable. So we do recommend those norms being posted visually, or them being very clear for the participants, so that if and when, which you said organically they may come up, very commonly they do, we are able to go right back to the norm. So it's not the teacher having to come up with what to do in those moments or how to clear the air, but rather, hey guys, let's revisit our norms from month zero. Let's think about what we do when students treat each other like that so they have a recovery plan.
And for students to be an active, participant in the process of creating those norms, so they're more likely to hold themselves and each other accountable for them.
So let's just create a situation. Let's say I'm a student and I've come in and we have a conversation and you've asked us to describe, it's a question that I really liked and I found in the appendix of the book. A student has just arrived at school and what do you think it feels like to be living in a new place with new people? And that was a question that is centered around the development of empathy, which is something that I wholeheartedly support. We all need to do that better. So I love that question. But let's imagine, what do you think it feels like to be living in a new place? And I say something and someone else laughs at me. If you're the teacher in that case, or if a teacher comes to you, say, oh my gosh, I didn't know what to do, what would you advise? Or if you were a teacher in that case, what would you do at that moment?
I would definitely take a moment to speak to the student who was laughed at, who might be feeling a certain way afterwards, just so I make sure that I check in with them about how they're feeling. And they might not want to or be willing to share how they're feeling truly in the moment. And then also just making sure that there are boundaries put in place beforehand to reference in that moment and make sure that the students acknowledge that, okay, we've said that we're going to follow this rule or this boundary and we didn't. And how do you think that makes, others feel? How would you feel if others treated you that way? And just kind of take it as an opportunity to have a conversation about that and about how to have a conversation. You want to make sure that you kind of check back in with everyone and make sure that everyone's kind of on a level playing field and understands that it's not a good feeling to have the roles reversed. So that's likely how I would handle it, just so that the student understands how they may have impacted the other student. Going forward, they might take a moment to think before kind of reacting in that way.
I like what you said about having a conversation about the conversation. Nina, do you want to add to what Kelly said?
Right. I think in these moments, I also empower the teacher to utilize what they would do in any other moment. So when a teacher comes to me and says, "What would you do?" I often say, "Well, what if they gave the wrong math answer and it was totally off base? The answer was 47 and they said 2. What would you say?" Right. So to empower, some of that is a style thing, right? It's about what the teacher is comfortable doing. Their own personalities come into the mix, right? We all have our own stories and things that maybe we were going through when we were students, right? So sometimes it's harder for some teachers than others. So I would really empower the teacher to utilize, what would you do any other time a student does something that's unexpected? How do you typically handle it? And then just help them to apply it to this scenario. If they're a teacher that would be willing to address it, I definitely agree with Kelly that in the moment addressing is 100% crucial, but how exactly that looks could be very different depending on the teacher's style and how they're running their classroom daily, because some teachers are much more direct and others will maybe do it a little bit more subtly.
And what they might already know about their students and how they would react a certain way.
Sure. So talk a little bit about what you believe are the benefits of doing this and whether there's any evidence that you can point to that doing this over a period of time, you're talking about morning classroom conversations. I think your recommendation is to do it 10 or 15 minutes on a daily basis. So after, a school year, 200 days or some, that's quite a lot of time in conversation. What do you know to be some of the benefits? And I wonder if you can even share an anecdote, a story about maybe a teacher or even better, a student who's talked about what they gain by doing this.
So I would definitely say, Kelly, I'd love for you to share the one story from your teacher regarding the feedback. But I really think for me, it's the classroom community, the climate, the students feeling like they have a brave space to engage. And we know the research demonstrates, as psychologists, we've done a ton of research on the fact that if a student feels connected to an environment, we're going to have less likelihood of them engaging in inappropriate behaviors in the school, showing disrespect, and even more so, physically coming to school. We have a significant issue at my high school, and I know otherwise, with students showing up. And when they do show up, their lack of engagement is often a very big problem that I discuss regularly. And so it's very hard to continue to do that every single day when you don't feel connected to a community. What this provides is a safe space, is a place that you can kind of call home in some sense, where you want to show up. You feel people care about you. You see your peers, but also you see your teachers in a little bit of a different light. And a lot of times I work up at a high school, the curriculum demands are so high that teachers can struggle to find the space for this. So what this does is it provides a platform for creating community, because it is oftentimes overlooked, but it's crucial in student success. There's a ton of research to demonstrate that connectedness leads to better outcomes. Also, academically, they're going to perform better if they're able to feel connected.
Yeah, there's. I just want to underscore what you said. I've become very concerned and may do a podcast, a few podcast episodes in the future about what I refer to as a kind of a post-pandemic pandemic, which is chronic absenteeism. And there's some research that points to what has contributed to it, but people got used to not being in school, and there's some anxiety connected with coming back on a regular basis. And but it seems to be very related to what you talked about, Nina, which is this a sense of not belonging and a disconnect from their peers, and there's some comfort and sometimes in staying home. So you can imagine someone who's anxious about going back to school on a regular basis comes into a math class, first thing, 8:30 in the morning, and we're going to talk about algebraic or quadratic equations. And the only other way you're connecting with your peers is through social media, which we've agreed is not a very authentic, satisfying, and sometimes intimidating and hurtful way to communicate. And what you're suggesting is in the morning coming in and knowing every day you're going to get a chance to have a conversation with your peers around a question that the teacher has been thoughtful about, or even the students have decided at some point. Could we have this as a question that could maybe make the difference between them deciding to come back the next day and the next day after that, or deciding, this isn't really for me, and I'm only here because someone's telling me I have to be here?
And you bring up an interesting point. There's a lot of things going on in our society, a lot of situations that oftentimes are very large, very traumatic even, and there doesn't feel like space to talk about them. But this classroom also sets a platform for that. When you're doing morning classroom conversations, you can talk about the most, hot topic. You don't have to stick to your script on what your prompt was that day, to be able to just be authentic and say, like, wow, that was really tragic. That school shooting that just occurred. Is anybody willing to share anything, or does anyone have any feelings that they want to talk about today? And giving students that platform rather than, a TikTok reel where they're learning about it in a little bit of a different way.
And Kelly, Nina, I think said that you might have a story to share from a teacher that you've been working with.
So I did just want to share kind of an anecdote, what I experienced when we were first piloting morning classroom conversations. So when I was working as a consultant with a few Jersey City middle schools, there was one class in particular that stood out to me because of the relationship that the teacher had previously, even before implementing morning classroom conversations with his students. It was clear that he prioritized, being close to his students and kind of fostering vulnerability and that brave space where people can share and grow kind of with each other. So when he started to implement morning classroom conversations, it did seem kind of like a natural addition that he was eager to put kind of his flair into. And a good example of this was one week in particular where he brought his guitar. He was a guitarist, and he brought it in to implement a morning classroom conversations activity where students, as well as the teacher, wrote songs about a hero in their life and why they look up to that person and what characteristics that person has. And it just kind of showed to me the flexibility of this approach to social emotional learning and social emotional character development, where teachers can use the book as their guide to implement it in whatever way they feel comfortable, their students are comfortable. And it showed me kind of the potential for how a cohesive a classroom can be, even for teachers and students who might struggle with that relationship beforehand to have that connection, perhaps especially for those teachers and for those classrooms.
Yeah. I want to raise a question because I'm sure you hear this from time to time. Okay, this sounds great, but there's been so much learning loss. We are so focused on academic achievement and getting kids to the finish line and making sure they graduate. We don't have time to for an extra 10 or 15 minutes added on to our curriculum to do this. A great idea. But we're under pressure, and we're feeling this need to really accelerate learning, get kids back on track. So, what would your response be to someone who raised that kind of concern? Nina, what are your thoughts? What would you say?
I think the reality is it takes more time when you don't do it because you're trying to recover from all of the other difficulties that students are having by not creating the space. So, for instance, it's kind of like a student who didn't eat breakfast. If we don't feed them breakfast, it's really hard to get started. You feel that exhaustion. Similarly, we want to fill their tank in the morning with social and emotional space that they can be human, because a lot of times curriculum doesn't necessarily lend itself to that because of the standards and all the things teachers themselves have to get done. So this really is actually a time saver. And it doesn't feel like that. It looks like an add-on, but I encourage anyone who has that mindset to reshape it and see it actually as a time saver rather than a time, suck, because the reality is it's taking you more time right now. Because I promise, multiple times a day working in a high school, I have teachers come down and say that they had to stop the lesson because so and so was crying, or they had to stop because this one wouldn't stop acting out, or wouldn't get off her phone, or wouldn't do those things. And we've seen the benefit that when you create that classroom community, you're going to see less and less of those behaviors. Will they go away completely? Of course not. But we will see a decrease in them, which will in the long term save you time.
Yeah, I like your comment about, need to have breakfast. I can imagine if someone said, we could squeeze in an extra period in the middle of the school day. We'll just eliminate lunch. And of course, kids would be hungry and irritable and just squeezing in more time for instruction is not always the rational, wise thing to do. Kelly, let me ask you about another objection that I read about, and I've actually talked to some of my podcast guests about, and that is that this whole emphasis, which has been around for a number of years now, but it's now this emphasis on social emotional learning is kind of a sneaky way for people to get inside the heads of kids and to talk to them about very personal things and to maybe find it easier to sort of indoctrinate them into ways of thinking and talking about things that are really personal, and that what educators ought to do is stick to the curriculum and not use SEL as some sneaky way to indoctrinate kids.
I think if those who argue that were to see morning classroom conversations in action, kind of, the way that it's supposed to be implemented, they would understand that we are really kind of all on the same side of allowing open dialogue, not allowing specific open dialogue, but anything, really anything goes, and it's about being more open, not more closed off. It's not going to be one side of the fence. It's about looking at both of them. And kind of meeting in the middle, learning about each other, and from that, learning a lot about yourself. So it really is the opposite, as I see it. It's not boxing people in mentally, but it's opening things up.
And I think it's also teaching life skills. You're going to need to understand things like conflict resolution, empathy, communication skills way beyond any high school, elementary school years, in that that's how youth will function in the real world. So I do believe that this is a life skill building conversation as well, that we are helping youth to become productive members of society by ensuring that they have the skills when someone in the class feels very differently from them, to be able to navigate it without, let's say, a physical altercation or some type of yelling. We want them to have the skills to converse about it cordially.
Thank you for that. I like your idea of inviting parents in to view it. And I think you're probably right that if they actually saw this going on, they would say, oh, if that's what you're doing, not only is it okay, but I'm grateful that you're doing it because my kids and other kids are learning to communicate more effectively than the way I often see them communicating. So in actuality, I think most parents, if they truly understood what you're promoting and teaching life skills, communication skills, empathy. You know, we used to, when I was young on our report cards, they don't do this anymore. They had a citizenship grade, and not that it was good to grade citizenship, but it was really about trying to give feedback to students and parents about how kids related to other people. And we all at the time thought that was really an important thing. It wasn't just the grades you got, you know, in English and in math and in reading and social studies, but were you a good person? And maybe that would sometimes flag an issue that we've got to work with your child on this or, but we used to call attention to it. And now it's sort of gotten into this vortex of the culture wars and politicized when really, if people understood what was going on, as you say, they would not only say it's okay, but they would probably appreciate it. As we come to a close, I just wonder if either of you has anything else you want to say about your book and what you hope people get out of it if they happen to read it.
I just want to add one thing about what you mentioned about the report card. Maurice Elias has a great book called The Other Side of the Report Card, and it's all about exactly what you're saying, this idea that we need to be rating students on other skills besides just the numbers. Our district actually just recently adopted a behaviors related to learning section on the elementary report card, and they have things like response inhibition and things that are rated just like would be math, and such a value. So I just wanted to add that piece.
And Kelly, any final thoughts?
Yes, I wanted to mention, I know we spoke about it briefly before, but it's really easy with social media today, especially as a child and adolescent, to feel lost with everything and kind of overwhelmed. But I feel like morning classroom conversations and social emotional learning in general is a really great way to kind of find their own path and learn more about their own identity and who they are genuinely, rather than who others feel they should be.
Yeah. Well, thanks to both of you for writing the book with Dr. Elias and for sharing your thoughts about why you wrote it and what the benefits can be for it. But I just want to thank both of you for joining me on Courageous Conversations.
Thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you.
Now, for listeners out there, let me just say that I hope you have a good, satisfying, and productive conversation with someone today or in the near future, especially with someone whose views might differ from your own. And as always, you can find this and all of our podcast episodes at schoolconversations.org and wherever you listen to your podcasts. So long, everyone.